was not correct. Yes, please.
Without microphone?
So yeah.
Which one?
Sarxian. Sarxian.
Okay, my talk is about the fusion reactions in nuclear astrophysics, which is done in Bagalyubov Laboratory of Theoretical Physics with my colleagues, Professor Adamian Antonenko, and in collaboration with also Gießen University with Professor Lenski. And talking about the fusion in astrophysics, I don't mean the transformation of hydrogen elements to helium, which is the main process in stars, but more I will be concentrated on reactions with much heavier elements, like carbon isotopes, oxygen, and so on. Why they play a key role? Because if we look at the hydrogen-rich environment or in stars, the elements heavier than hydrogen but lighter than carbon, like lithium, beryllium, bor, all they have a positive Q alpha value, which means that these nuclei are very easily destroyed before they can the fusion with these elements can take place. So from this point of view, the first reaction which should be considered and which are important in the nuclear nuclear astrophysics is reaction carbon plus carbon. The typical environment where this where this reaction take place and can be very important and can influence on the last stage of the evolution of the stars are, for example, in non-explosive scenarios, which take place in the center of very massive stars towards the end of their lifetime, where the temperature is about 0.6 and till 1 gigakelvin. And the second scenario is like in stellar explosion, where during the ignition phase of supernovae, where the temperature is much higher, is about 10 gigakelvin. The second candidate of nuclei, which should be also considered, is oxygen nuclei. But because of very strong Coulomb repulsion, this plays less important role, and mainly these processes take place in explosive environments. So, and moreover, I was talking about these temperatures. Actually, from a typical nuclear physics point of view, these are very, very low energies. And these reactions occurs at extreme sub-barrier energies. The typical gamma of energy, for example, for carbon plus carbon reaction is about 1.3 MeV. One should note that here, for example, for carbon plus carbon reaction, the Coulomb barrier is about 10 MeV. So this is about only 30% of the Coulomb barrier. So, but to study these reactions, we have one main problem. This energy are in a range where no reliable cross-section measurements can be made with the present experimental technologies. And we have two possible solutions. One of them is to try to extrapolate the existing experimental data to more lower energies, starting with the existing high energy data, or try to do some theoretical calculations and made some predictions for this cross section. And before continue, I just want to show you some other representation of the fusion cross section, which the so-called S factor representation. Here is given the definition, and it is the product of the cross section and the gamma factor. And because it is thought that the gamma factor removes the very strong Coulomb repulsion, in that case, some models predict that using the S factor representation, the behavior of S factor at very, very low energy is not so dramatically stronger dependence of energy. So this, but actually I'll use both representation, the fusion cross-section and also the S-factor representation. So now let's look at the experimental data for oxygen plus oxygen reaction in S-factor representation. Here is presented different data from different experimental groups. You see here that at very low energies we have a very huge uncertainties of the data. Here is presented in another scale. So from looking at this data, it is very, very hard to make a prediction. Why? Because if we look at the tendencies of the energy dependence of the S factor, we see that some reactions show that we should have some growing. We don't see any maxima for this data. But for example, the green line, the experiment which is presented by green line, shows that maybe there is some maximum in this S factor, and here we should have more smooth dependence on energy. Moreover, there were some experimental data with also much heavier elements like nickel plus nickel reactions, where was also observed some maximum for this S factor for these reactions. So if we look for example for carbon plus carbon reaction, the situation here is even more dramatic. So to make any reliable conclusion about the behavior of the S factor, or which is the same the fusion cross section, is completely not possible. Here is presented the cross section, and here is the S factor representation. So to make some conclusion about the behavior of this dependence, it's very, very difficult. I should mention that this data is more is newer data, this red lines. So now, what can tell us the theory? Talking about the fusion of these elements, we actually are talking about the capture. Why? Because they are very light nuclear, and usually, typically, after the capture stage, this if the projectile is captured by the target, this system usually fused. So the capture cross-section, we can present it as a sum of the partial capture cross-section. Talking about capture, I mean the probability to cross the Coulomb barrier. And here, the different approach and different models actually gives us different probability for the capture probability. So, and to calculate it, we use our previously developed model, which we call quantum diffusion approach. This model was developed to study the reactions with very heavy nuclei, and in particular to calculate the capture cross-section for super heavy elements and so on and so on. And we will use this approach. I will show how we extend this approach to consider also very light nuclear. What is the difference, and so on and so on. So the our approach based on following assumptions. The first one, that the fusion can be treated on the one collective variable, which is the relative distance between the colliding nuclei. We know that during the collision, many different states can be excited, which influence on the fusion. So we assume that this collective coordinate is somehow coupled with these excitations, and these excitations, which, for example, different collective modes and so on, can be presented as some environment. So we somehow should be able to modulate the environment and try to calculate. Okay, I'll show this later. So the assumptions which I show you in a previous slide actually means that we have a total Hamiltonian for the systems which contains the collective Hamiltonian, which depends on the relative distance of colliding nuclei. We have the internal excitations, and we have some coupling between the collective coordinate and the excitations. As a collective system, we take an inverted parabola. I'll show how, actually, we all know that real nuclear-nuclear potential is not a parabola, but I'll show how we approximate the real potential with the inverted one. And we assume that the coupling between the collective and internal subsystems are coupled linearly, which will mean that the transport equations which we will get is means constant friction. So here is, and once more, I should mention that all this, I'm talking about the formalism which was developed to consider heavy system. So in this case, if we look at the real potential, and the procedure how we approximate the real potential with the inverted one is the following. We take the same radius of the barrier, the same height of the barrier, and we say that the frequency of the inverted oscillator is founded from the condition of equality of the classical motion in these two cases. Here is just an example for oxygen plus lead reaction. And now we have the potential, we have the full Hamiltonian, and we can calculate the first and second moments for the collective coordinate. So I should mention that you can see that here we have a closed system, and all the transport coefficients which are obtained in this way actually are are obtained in a self-consistent way. So, and for the fusion cross-section, we have the following formula, which is the ratio of the mean value of the collective coordinate over the second moment of the collective coordinate. So, this coupling leads to fluctuation of coordinate, which is somehow written here, and we found the equation for the first and second moments, which actually contain friction and diffusion, and they are obtained in a self-consistent way. Moreover, in this formalism, actually take into account the fluctuation and dissipation effects, and also non-Markovian effects, which are in collision of heavy events, heavy ion systems. So here I just presented the final expression for the capture probability. You see here it depends on external turning point. It depends on the constant friction, which is here through these roots of S1 and S2. It depends on the frequency of the approximated oscillator, and also it depends on internal excitation width. Here should be this gamma, which is responsible for non-Markovian effects. This approach we apply to study the reactions with heavy nuclei, and I should mention that actually, we get very good results of calculation and experimental data in a systematic way. I mean, it was more than about 100 different systems. So somehow we can be sure that this is working at least for the heavy system. Now, what is the difference between the heavy system and lighter one? Here is presented for example of potential energies in case of oxygen plus lead reaction and oxygen plus oxygen reaction. First one, we see that at if we go below the barrier, let's say 2, 1, 2, 3, even 5 MeV, the overlap of the densities of nuclear is not so big, but if we look, is not so large. But if we look, for example, for oxygen plus oxygen reaction, the external turning point at the same energy lies very, very far from the collision. So somehow we should be able to take into account this. So in other words, this means that for oxygen plus oxygen reaction, this approximation which we made for the potential energy could not be work for very light system. And moreover, it means that here the constant friction, which is an approximation for the very heavy system, could not work also for the very light system. Why? Because here you see this, this it is better, one can see here, if we look at the external turning point, the dependence of external turning point on the energy below the barrier. For example, here we see that it is only one Fermi, but for the very light system, it is something like 6-7 Fermi. So this indicates the external turning point actually indicates the extent of overlap of nuclear density profiles, which is responsible for the nuclear friction. And at the same energy below the barrier, the turning point is located much closer to the position of corresponding Coulomb barrier in case of very heavy system. So somehow we should be able to include in the model also the dependence of friction on coordinate. So this I told. So how we take into account, for example, the dependence of the friction on energy, or which is the same dependence of the friction on external turning point. We take it in a form which is presented here. This form of friction actually gives us a comparatively larger overlap of the nuclear surfaces in case of two heavy nuclear. This first was proposed, for example, in this in these articles when they were studying the deep inelastic collisions. And the second one, we should somehow fix the dependence of the energy, the frequency should depend somehow on the energy. And to find the approximated potential frequency, we do the following. We take the same high-end position of the barrier with the real and approximated, or it is better say not the approximated, but replaced potential. And we take the condition of equality of energy under the barrier. And the last one, because the frequency, because the friction depends on energy, and the excitation width also depends on all these parameters. And in the Markovian limit, we should meet these conditions. We take it in the following way, where K1 is some parameter. Actually, it is it can be also some free parameter, which depends on the system. But as I will show, if we take it in this form, it becomes universal for all considered systems. And now the at the very extreme sub-barrier energy, one can obtain a very simple expression for capture probability. It is written here. It is a Wong-like formula. And if we look more carefully, which it depends, it depends on the Coulomb barrier, on the Coulomb energy at the barrier, and that's all. Actually, it is some universal, very simple and universal formula. So now, let's look at the results of our calculations. Here is presented the carbon plus carbon reaction. We see that the general tendencies we represent. As I mentioned, it is very difficult to conclude about the behavior because we have a large uncertainties in energy. But we can reproduce the last experiment. If we look at the S factor representation, we see a clear maximum somewhere here. Let's look now to another reaction, oxygen plus oxygen. Here we see the same. Here is experiments are much better, and we see that it's all the experiment lies on one line. And here again we see maximum in S factor. Moreover, the experiments which are here are very close to this maximum. If we are right, so let's say 1 or 2 MeV below the barrier, if the experiment can go further 1 or 2 MeV below the barrier, it should be, this maximum should be somehow observed. So, but we have also other calculations like carbon plus oxygen. Again, here you see that this maximum is somehow, one can say, observed, for example, for this reaction. But still, the experiment should be done some more carefully, let's say. And also, for example, for carbon plus silicon reactions, you see here the results of calculations and the experimental data, and once more, I should mention that here there is no fit. It is all the calculations are done with this very simple formula without any fitting parameters. So we compare our results with the VKB model, and what we observed that. As we include the fluctuation in dissipation effects, we see that fusion probability at sub-barrier energies increase and decrease at above the barrier energies. If we compare it with the VKB model, which is presented by dashed line, and now we use also the same formalism, but taking into account, as I say, the dependence of friction on coordinate external turning point or on energy, and we try to look also the medium mass nuclei. And here we again get perfect results, for example, for silicon-silicon reaction, calcium-calcium, and these three different isotopes of calcium here is presented. Also, you see the other reactions. I should mention that, for example, for this helium plus lead reactions, it's measured only 1N channel, so it is not the experiment is not the real fusion cross-section, but it is only 1N channel. So summarizing, in what we do, we had a very well-developed diffusion approach which was applied to describe heavy fusion of heavy system. We extended our model considering the friction depending on the bombarding energy. We see that if we compare our results with a typical VKB approach, we found that fluctuation and dissipation increase fusion cross-section at sub-barrier energies. We predict existence of S factor. However, more experimental data needed to confirm our predictions. at in the limit of very weak frictions, which is correspond to extreme sub-barrier energy, we found a very simple analytical expression for capture probability. And this expression can be applied to calculate the reaction rates of for different reactions of astrophysical interest. And the strong decline of fusion cross-section at sub-barrier energy considerably reduced the stellar burning rates, and moreover leads to several experimental problems inhibiting the measurements in many cases. Thank you.
Questions? Christian, please.
You didn't compare to other models because the other theoretical models do not predict such a decline of the cross section near the Gamow window. The last one is a TDHF work from Simenel and American people, and I think it's still very high, the cross section. In the Gamow region.
This is true. Yeah, I also didn't see any predictions at such a low energies, theoretical predictions. But for example, the experimental data which I show, for example, by Jiang group, if we look at the experiment, we reproduce the fusion cross section for this reaction perfectly well. Yeah, but if we go down to lower energies, if we are right, and if our model is reasonable to apply to these reactions, we should somehow see this maximum of S factor.
We have to be careful with experimental data, which are difficult to be published. For example, the stellar collaboration, which use the same kind of method as Jiang, is in agreement below the barrier, but the extension of the cross section near the Gamow window, still the cross section is very high. And there is another collaboration in America from Notre Dame, but there you might be more in agreement with them, but it's not yet published.
So you mean you are talking about some data which are not not yet published. And you mean the carbon plus carbon reaction?
Of course.
Yeah, but this is... Yeah, I understand. But what I am talking, it is... Yeah. But what I am talking, what I have shown is actually the experimental data is not at Gamow window. It is one MeV higher. And actually this one MeV for these reactions means even several order of magnitude difference in cross section. So it is. I'm not saying that it is. It is our predictions. Let's say.
Valery.
You show good agreement to experimental data. On the other hand, that's me who is talking.
Sorry.
You show good agreement of your model to experimental data. On the other hand, as far as I understand your model, you do not include any interference effect, which are clearly seen in the experimental data. Can you comment on this something?
No, we do not include. We even more, we cannot, our model cannot say nothing about, for example, this oscillation in, for example, fusion. We just can say about the general trend. Not even general trend, but the averaged, let's say, averaged cross-section.
But this interference comes from what effect? Do you understand this?
Which one?
In experimental data. Oscillation, independence.
Somehow they say that maybe there is also some physics there. But I don't know. I cannot comment what is the reason. Maybe because, for example, the states in magnesium, as I understand, they are forming magnesium, which are, the states are not enough to populate all the states, and this could be one of the reasons. So it's...
Manuele, please.
Yeah, I would like to ask something about the model you showed before. There was a sentence that surprised me when you when you show that this factor gamma is responsible for non-Markovian effects. This is quite surprising for me that you have such a term inside, because non-Markovian effects is something that I would not expect, honestly. So how important is this effect when you go to low energy? Because maybe when you go to high energy, that is not very important.
Yeah, you are right.
But when you go down,
you are right.
This non-Markovian effect changes completely the pattern of the capture. And so I was very surprised to see this term.
No, you are right. This is why we take this this excitation with in this way, that at Markovian limit, which is responsible for very low energies, we in the limit we should not see we are going to Markovian limit. You are right, but they are coupled. This K1 is coupled the excitation with the friction. Yeah, if you cannot go only by gamma, you should go also with the friction.
Yeah, but when you talk about non-Markovian, means that you have a phase space you cannot sample in an independent way. You know, it means that the evolution of your phase space in your phase space depends where you land in the phase space. This is the meaning of a non-Markovian effect.
Maybe we are talking on different languages.
No, yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah, no, but if we go to very low energies, this means that we go to very low friction.
Yes.
Yeah? And this means that we go to very high gamma. Mm-hmm. Very high gamma, it means that we go to Markovian limit. So it is included in the model. So if we go down by energy, lower and lower, lower energies, it means that we go to lower, lower friction. And at the same time, we go to the higher and higher gamma. And and they are coupled. And
sorry, I don't want to. No, it's not clear to me when the non-Markovian effects appear in your model. Which energy range?
Which effect?
The non-Markovian.
It is near the barrier.
Near the barrier.
Yeah.
Claude.
This is because
Okay. Please.
This is this formula which I show you. It is this simple analytical formula. It is actually only at extreme sub-barrier energies, because at near the barrier energies, the formula is actually this one, which includes everything. Yeah, it is just the simple analytic formula for very very low energies.
Not.
Can the results of your model be compared with stellar evolution? Has it any effect on these calculations?
Evolution of what?
Stellar evolution.
Yeah. You mean the reaction rates?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is on what on which we are working now to apply this simple formula to calculate the reaction rates. Yeah, and also it was mentioned also, I think, in the summary. Yeah. So this is, we are working. Thank you.
Okay. I have a question. If I guess in your model there is no treatment of the screening effects of any kind. From this point of view, the comparison with the experiment, I think it's extremely delicate, because for sure in the experiments you have the screening effect coming from electrons, and in the stellar environment you don't. So this is, as far as I know, especially for heavy projectiles or heavy reactions with heavy ions, it's really not well known at all.
You mean in a real stellar environment?
In real stellar environment you have very completely bare nuclei in plasma. So I agree. So this should be taken into account comparing to the experimental data.
But we don't have, you mean experimental data in labs, or you mean experimental data In lab, they, as I understand, in lab they are somehow take into account this screening effect. No?
Yeah, but the problem it's not well known. So.
Yeah, <it's laughs> no, no. Well, yeah, I agree. Maybe this different experiment, the difference of between different experiments, also partly coupled also with this problem.
Yeah, yeah, so it's difficult to compare to the real experiments. Experimental data.
This is one of the reasons why we compare our results not only for carbon plus carbon or oxygen plus oxygen reaction, but I've shown that we compare it also with the heavier system where these problems are not so strong. So if it is working on all these systems, we hope that it should work also with these complicated systems, let's say.
I think that will stop the discussion at this point. Thank you very much again for the presentation. And the last presentation, the last scientific report, which will be presented, is on the prompt neutron investigation of nuclear fission induced by resonance neutrons. It will be presented by Shakir Zeynalov. Yes, please.
Yes. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I will try to be as short as possible. I understand that everybody tired. So I will start from two motivation experiments. First one is the experiment on MEV range neutrons with Neptunium target, which demonstrated that increasing of excitation energy of the nuclear increase prompt fission neutrons only from heavy fragment. This fact still has no clear explanation. And another experimental fact is the fluctuation of total kinetic energy and mass distribution in resonances and the correlation of this fluctuation with prompt fission neutron emission. So the modern models consider the nuclear fission process as competition between attractive nuclear force, nuclear and repulsive Coulomb forces. Nuclear surface performs constant motion, including contraction and elongation. When excitation energy increases the amplitude of surface motion to very long elongation, the nuclear speed splits usually into two fission fragments. Nuclear shell effects make preferable asymmetric scission with mass ratio about 1.5. One of the main characteristics of diffusion, therefore, is mass and total kinetic energy distributions. The initial excitation of fission fragment can be deduced from the configuration of fissile nuclei immediately before scission. And information about fission fragment excitation can be obtained from simultaneous measurements of prompt fission neutrons, fission fragments masses and mass distribution and masses and total kinetic energy. The convenient tool for investigation of prompt fission neutron is twin back-to-back ionization chamber with Frisch grids and with fast neutron detector allocated at some distance from the fission chamber cathode along the normal to the fission to the chamber cathode. Chamber cathode usually made from the very thin conductive foil with fissile deposit. And when fission fragments detected in two chambers, and kinetic energy can be measured separately in each chamber, and the angle of the fission fragment in respect to the anode of the chamber, theta angle, can be measured from the drift time of the ionization electrons to respective anode. Prompt fission neutrons can be measured by fast neutron detector. And cathode signal can be used as a trigger, and the stop signal then used by the neutron detector, and energy of the neutron can be determined by time of flight. And this kinematic diagram of the fission process depicted in this slide is needed to move to make the calculations in the frame of the moving fission fragment. So this experiment is adopted from experiments suggested by Butz-Jorgensen and Knitter in the 80s, but only modification was made by implementing digital signal processing. And in our approach, we use signals from charge-sensitive preamplifier and using digital differentiation to make pile-up rejection. This is demonstrated in two slides. This and original signals can be additionally filtered using the digital technique to improve the signal to noise ratio in original data and improve the facilitate the digital differentiation. So in this slide we demonstrate the implementation of Ramos-Shockley theorem to modeling the drift of the ionization electrons to the anode and evaluation of the cosine of angle between fission fragment motion and the normal to the cathode plane, which is at the same time the angle between fission fragment and prompt fission neutron motion. This is the final formulas which we use for evaluation of energy losses in the target layer and the fissile material. Just from this picture, when we draw the pulse height versus drift time, and from this data we can calculate cosine of angle and energy losses for different depending on the angle on the cosine theta. This slide demonstrates the precision of the angle determination in this approach. And here, all this, in order to get true mass distribution, mass and kinetic distribution, we have to apply the pulse height effect, which plays very important role in our experiments. In this picture, we demonstrate the mass and energy, kinetic energy dependence of the pulse height effect. It should be noticed that not all experiments take into account this effect, and that's why they're getting wrong distributions. So after all this correction was applied, we're getting a very similar picture into very similar kinetic energy distribution in both chambers, and more or less good mass resolution. And in this picture, I demonstrate, we demonstrate the constant fraction time marking we developed for time of light measurements of the neutron velocity. And this here is, we demonstrate the pulse shape separation of prompt gamma, prompt from fission neutrons from prompt gamma. And finally, we get the separation approximately by two order of magnitude. This red line is time of light distribution for prompt fission neutrons. And when we have these values, then we can make transformation to the frame connected to the moving fission fragment, and calculate the needed the prompt fission neutron multiplicity. But one of the problems with this that that prompt fission neutron detected by neutron detector can be emitted by fission fragment moving in the direction of the neutron detector and from the fission fragment moving in opposite direction. For majority of mass splits, this contribution is very small, except the area about around the 130 mass units. And in this slide demonstrate the angular distribution of the prompt fission neutron emission from the in the frame of the fission fragment. It's almost perfect. Perfectly isotropic. Because it is very important to prove the isotropicity, because we use this this feature to implement our data analysis procedure. And another issue, we have to evaluate the efficiency of neutron detection by our neutron detector. We evaluated by comparison our experimentally measured velocity distributions with Maxwellian one. And in the right slide, we demonstrate the efficiency dependence on the fission fragment velocity. So finally, we have gotten the results of prompt fission neutron on mass dependence and kinetic energy dependence in comparison with other results. It should be noticed that our results is very close to old results obtained in Kurchatov Institute in 1964. The difference can be explained by much better mass resolution achieved in our work. And for comparison, I also presented here IRMM data published in 2017. It is quite different from our data, and we explained that with the fact that in IRMM they used several neutron detectors and position sensitive detector, but did not take into account the pulse height dependence on the position. Position determined by ionization chamber. So the same comparison, the same result with new result we obtained for Californium spontaneous fission and compared with literature data. With Californium, we have got more or less reasonable agreement with literature, and that's why we consider our measurement with californium and with uranium at, as reference with the new experimental setup we will use with multiple neutron detectors in order to increase the efficiency of prompt fission neutron registration. Because of neutron-induced fission, efficiency of this method is very small if we use pure Butz-Jorgensen-Knitter approach. And that's why we decided to increase the number of neutron detectors to 32. In that case, in order to determine the angle between fission fragment and prompt fission neutron motion, we needed position-sensitive detector. We developed backgammon type of position-sensitive detector with a chain filter load, and with this approach, we are able to determine two-dimensional coordinate of the center of gravity of fission fragment in both chambers, and with very high precision determine the angle between fission fragment and neutron detector. Here we demonstrate the parameters which we obtain with this detector, position resolution data shown here. Finally, this all this investigation we did, the main goal was to have some reference for new developed setup, which we will use at IREN facility and with our Van de Graaff accelerator for MEV region sub-barrier fission investigation in after renovation of our Van de Graaff accelerate. And finally, our main result, the digital data acquisition system was developed and tested. The digital pulse processing algorithm was developed and tested. The software for prompt fission neutron multiplicity analysis was revised, and some known bugs were removed. All stages of new development verified, improved our recent results. New setup consisted of position-sensitive twin ionization chamber and neutron detector with 32 liquid scintillating detectors developed and ready for testing with iron resonance neutron source. That's why. Thanks for your attention.
Okay, thank you very much. Any question, please? Adam, please.
It's interesting project, but in this type of reaction you also have a gamma emission. Yes. Especially the high energy gamma ray emission, which might somehow be or should be added to the measurement of neutrons and to the rest in order to see the complete picture. Do you plan in this type of experiments to include also measurement of high energy gamma rays?
Yes, we planned some extension of our experiments. For example, we can measure with this setup, we can measure angular distributions of gammas. And also, we're planning to measure not only fission fragment kinetic energy masses and prompt fission neutron multiplicity, but also it would be possible to measure nuclear charge with this approach, nuclear charge of the fission fragments. Of course, not in full range, but we will try to use different method to cover as wide range as possible.
We have the next point on the agenda. So this is the what's called general discussion. But in fact, this is an opportunity to ask the questions concerning the topics which were presented today. And and let me maybe it will be easier if we go point by point, project by project, which was discussed, and then it's an opportunity to ask additional questions to the persons presented the given points or the directors of the lab or the whole institute. So let me start from the research activities under the term investigation of neutron-nuclear interaction and properties of the neutron, status and prospects. This was presented by Vichagin. So I leave you 15 seconds to think also about other topics. Prepare your questions for this. Yes, Klaus, please.
Well, we on this talk or presentation, we had an after discussion, and we felt that this presentation presented the whole conceivable Newton program, which could be done. And I would have expected that some priorities should be set, and not just everything mentioned which can be done. And indeed, in one respect, where we had recently a review, this was the Newton lifetime. In fact, there was no progress. And so, really, we are wondering what will be, where will be the priorities? They should be set. So this is a comment, after comments to this talk.
Maybe I have a related comment also that we have seen also part of this program which was not directly related to nuclear physics, not to our PAC. So this is also the question how we share the different topics between different PACs. I think it would be nice, following the comment of Claude, to concentrate on the topics and the priorities which are related to this particular PAC. Yeah, do not describe the whole program because this makes everything very broad. And although there are topics very interesting also for us from the scientific point of view, but not related to the PAC on nuclear physics, some of them. So, yeah, other comments on this? Other questions? Yeah?
Maybe I have a question. What you mean, what the no-all semantics is for this part? Because it's very different to split what kind of the... For example, another taxology, the experiment with the mice, it was presented on the PAC meeting, the poster with the results of this. It also was presented on the PAC of low-condensed matter. Because in principle, we use the nuclear methods, but it's related to the medicine. It's not a solid-state physics too. Where is the border between these thematics?
This is the whole question. where is the border? So, but it's already answered partially the question. If this is presented at two PACs, something is, maybe not optimized. Either we should have the joint session in this case. It would be easier, okay, on some topics. We've done this with particle physics. Either it should be shared in a clear way. We should not present the same twice because it's not really the best way to proceed, I think. Comment?
Yes. Nevertheless, on the scientific council meeting, which will be in February, I must talk about nuclear physics during achievement of nuclear physics during last 3 years, the first 3 years of 7-year plan. But from this talk, it's not clear for me what I must to stress the main achievement in this item. It's a big item for Frank Laboratory. It's to you.
It's a question?
Yeah.
I not present here the main results. The main results was presented at the previous PAC meeting when I was report from the previous 3 years. I think we will prepare some slides for you.
Not few. Okay. Some slides. Well.
Okay, I don't see other questions for this topic, so let's go to the next one, which is strongly related, of course. This is the letter of intent to open new project, modernization of the EG5 accelerator and the development of its experimental infrastructure. Are there any additional questions? Yeah, I propose just to ask the questions, or of course we'll have the discussion on every topic tomorrow in the closed session, so we should not already say today what will be the recommendation. Yeah, just a question. Yes,
Vladimir. Which I can say that electrostatic generator in the plan will be use of multi-beam configuration. The tile will be next presentation. I did not see this. What does mean multi-beam configuration?
We mean what the accelerator have two experimental hall, and the construction of the accelerator allows to have three beam in each hole.
In one time?
No, but it will be in the different time. In principle, it allows us to keep on one place in one hole. The setup for research with fast neutrons, for example, in another experimental hole, install setup for the solid state physics, for example. And we somehow share the time between these experiments.
Okay, I see.
But we don't need to remove the device and install another one.
I understand.
Okay, Adam?
This concerns this modernization of the EG5. It was said that this should be it's planned the upgrade to the 4.1 MeV, and because this is needed for nuclear physics experiments, and it was lacking a little bit explanation what type of experiments, and particularly what are their interests. Of this type, increasing of this energy, they were not shown. Maybe it would be good to put it more clearly or say.
I have only a short comment, but in practical, now we have we are not going too much increase the energy. It's our main goal to increase the current. Practically now we could accelerate helium or deuteron up to 2.5, I think, yes, maybe. We don't increase too much energy, but main reason for modernization increase the current, because now the flux density of the fast neutrons is too low for experiments. From the point of view, what kind of experiments all program with the fast neutrons with emission of the charged particle in the reaction, which we realize, Valerie have done comments, which we realized now in as a nuclear center in Beijing or somewhere in Europe, we can bring back to the Dublin.
Other questions? Maybe for curiosity and to have the reference point, do you know how much would cost a completely new accelerator, new Van den Graaff, which would be more or less with the same parameters? Yeah, is it a big difference factor of 2 or
7-10 mega US dollars, mega euros, 7-10?
I think it's important to have in mind when we discuss the
instead of 1.5.
Exactly, right? It's important to have the reference point. Okay. If there are no other questions on this topic, so the next topic is the proposal for opening a new project, Becquerel 2. With the emulsions, with the technique which is one of the first used probably in nuclear particle physics. Are there additional questions related? Adam?
I did not ask this question before because I thought it will be my ignorance, but then discussing during the lunch break, it said maybe this is not completely like this. Namely, this is rather old technique, and there are many new techniques on the market, which, for example, tracking detectors, active targets, and so on. So it would be possible to compare the attractiveness of this method to the new ones, which are more on the market, and what is better here for using this the foil method.
Somebody willing to answer the question? No, no, there's no nobody from this research group.
I cannot comment. I think most of the data that were shown were very high energy, and I'm not sure the same technique to be easily compared with the TPC, or you need to build some new device. I don't know if there exists a device like that. I mean, the technique is correct, but I don't know if there exists any device that can do this energy, same measurement in the same energy range as this one. I think the advantage in this case was that this was applied to high, very high energy ranges. That's why they use photographic films. That's what I understood.
Yeah, this is it's difficult to answer for others. So that for sure, some energy ranges which are for which we can use different techniques for sure. This of course at very very high energy maybe no, because everything is going forward. So it's quite difficult to apply different techniques. I don't know the very big spectrometers or something like that. But it depends on the energy, strongly on the energy. Although I think we should be aware also of the limitations which were not explained in the talk, that in fact in the emulsions we are not 100% sure what was the nuclear reactions which happened. We don't know in which nucleus the reaction happened, and we don't know the energy of this reaction, at which energy the reaction happened. So
yes,
there are limitations, obviously. Of course, we know nothing about the neutrons and not charged particles, and many, many other limitations, of course, on the.
Also, these films require some treatment with temperature. Okay, sometimes they need to raise the temperature to cut some of the tracks and so on. So it's indeed not a very simple technique. I think this kind of tracks we see is after the films are processed also with temperature. So it's a complex technique indeed.
Okay, but I think in terms of question we can we can ask questions but we'll not have answers today. So maybe these questions can be transmitted somehow.
Only to Tuken very carefully, because he is very enthusiastic emulsion method, very enthusiastic. I don't know where in high energy laboratory and
in opinion of several members, it was very well presented and very very well defended through the questions and answer to the questions. So the enthusiasm is definitely there. But I don't know if we'll have any opportunity still to discuss and to answer the questions which were asked now.
Tomorrow maybe I ask him.
Maybe it would be good. During the closed session we can dedicate.
I asked the scientific secretary of this laboratory this morning, and he told that the laboratory not against this project, not against, because they ask not so big money for it, like this.
Following this, what you say, because it, as I remember, there was quite a lot of people involved in this project, and it would be then nice if this our committee is as enthusiastic as the leaders in order to fully support occupying this 50 or I don't know 40 people with this. So maybe we should have this discussion, additional one, to fully know if we have any doubts that this will be solved.
Okay.
Well, may I?
Yes.
Well, I think this reflects also the opinion of the committee. We are not against, but we believe that the impact is limited.
And definitely we should discuss if this is the first priority, top priority, or not top priority topic or project. Okay. So let's go to the next item which we discussed, is the status of the factor of super heavy elements. Any additional questions? Sigurd, please.
Now, for the future super heavy element program, you certainly need some raw material. And I'm thinking about iron source material, calcium, titanium, chromium, 50, and on the other hand, also target material, and this especially the actinide targets. So the question is, are you completely independent from foreign countries, especially concerning the actinide targets from the US laboratories? Under the present political situation, I could imagine that there could arise some problems to get this material to Russia. So are you independent to produce all this material here in Russia?
Good question. First of all, the light actinides like americium, plutonium is quite enough in Russia. We not need additional quantity. In case of the berkelium and the californium, yes, we have official data from Oak Ridge Laboratory that they will ready to send us californium in the spring this year without any troubles. After experiment with californium, mixture californium, yes, of the 251 49, they will be ready to start the preparation of the berkelium target. Yes, it will be, I think, the next year after experiment with californium plus titanium. And the official representative of DOE, yes, send the official letter, what we need else. Yes, they're ready to send us new material, the first. Second, yet, and the new Russian the national project, which in which will be include the Rosatom and Joint Institute, it will be the special the agreement with the Dimitrovgrad, the Institute of Atomic Reactor. They start the work to preparation of the berkelium. Especially for factory of super heavy element. In case of the calcium, we have the special agreement with the Elektrochemical Board. Yes, and they are ready to prepare for us each year 12 grams of the calcium 48, 66% of enrichment each year.
Ты забыл сказать, что two or three months ago we received plutonium 244. It's very important material from US without problem, despite of political situation.
Yes, you can understand what means the plutonium 244. I think only Oak Ridge have this plutonium. Mm-hmm. Not. But we received the 15 gram milligram without any problem.
Concerning the use of this plutonium 244, I think a good reaction would be titanium plus plutonium in order to compare this reaction with
this experiment was planned 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Plutonium 244 plus titanium 50 in order to understand what cross section will be in case of the titanium 50. Thanks, Igor. About this.
Other questions, if any? I don't see any other questions. We had also several posters related to, even to the question of Sigurd on the production of metallic beams on the calcium 48 and also production with different techniques. We had several posters, so see, we had also additional information coming from that. Okay? There's no problem. No. Okay. I don't see any other questions. So the next topic was related to the prospects for the study of multinucleon transfer reactions. So maybe I will start. It was not completely clear for me how this program will deal with heavy beams. So there is a project to produce very heavy beams for this part which is related on uranium or curium or uranium with the upgraded U400R or with the super heavy element factory, because both I think they can in principle provide heavy beams. So what are the plans?
We look after the new separator, like first physical setup for new experimental hull for U400R.
Yeah, and then the heavy beams will be developed at this new upgraded cyclotron. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So this was the question. Yeah. If the beams will be developed, the beams are not available today. So
after upgrade of U400R, we will have, in case of the calcium, it will be 2.5 particle microm. But more important for this kind of research, that the intensity of the uranium beam will be higher than we have in the factory. Factory, then the average calcium, titanium, not from for uranium. But after upgrade of the U400R, we will have quite good intensity of uranium.
Okay, it's clear. With the high energy now, because in principle the energy should be above 7 MeV or something like that, yeah, for these reactions. Per nucleon, of course. So this is, it should be quite a good modernization of the cyclotron to get to this.
If you
high
support
energy.
This project, we can start to design of new. Only design, of course, first.
Okay. Any other questions on this very interesting topic of the multinucleon transfer reactions? Hopefully important for future.
Maybe comment from you?
Don't understand what you expect else.
Sasha Karp pushed this direction.
So, yeah, maybe one thing was missing in this presentation. It was very, very well done, but it was not showing this potential program and future program here with respect to other programs at other facilities. It was not compared at all, what is, because there are several programs going on and will go on the same multinucleon transfer reactions at other facilities, so it was not put in the perspective.
Okay, may I comment maybe a little bit on that? Yes, indeed, there are many projects in many laboratories on the studying of multinucleon transfer, but most of them, or nearly all of them, are focused on producing new isotopes for studying. For example, all these gas cell techniques mean that when you stop your products, so you lose completely all information about reaction. Yes, and so for reaction studies, all these projects are nearly meaningless. Yes, and but with this project, we will have access for the angles, for the velocities, so for energies of the products. So this is not only producing and studying of these isotopes, yes, but also this setup will work for studying of reactions itself. So it's more rich, I mean, in information which can be obtained.
Still, Bob spectrometers at Ganil and at Leniaro can do a big job. They can change the angle. They are very similar to the spectrometer which is proposed here. So this should be somehow taken into account.
No. I was speaking about this dedicated facilities. I don't know. They are called, for example, N126 factory or gas cells and with laser technique or with MR-TOF spectrometer. After that, they are not interested at all to the reaction mechanism. Yeah? They are interested in production rate, and that's all. And so they are focused on spectroscopy, not for reactions. And here we can do both.
I would, because this is a complicated problem, very interesting but complicated. I think here the larger panorama of different possibilities and also the somehow combined efforts on the reaction mechanism would be necessary. To be honest, I don't believe that one facility can measure everything and understand the reaction mechanism for the multinucleon transfer reaction. This is the process is known since, I don't know how many years, probably, I don't know, 50 probably or 40 years. Deep inelastic studies started to some extent here. It was a long time ago. So this is, I think, very complex program, should be studied several places.
Yeah, just me add one comment. As I said before in the comment, most of this work are done in a blind way. You know, they pick up a system, they pick up some lab energy, but really the prediction or cross-section is very difficult to make. We know that an example Alexander model can reproduce most of the experimental data except one reaction, as far as I know. But still, the gross features are reproduced by the models. Okay, but when you go to specific isotopes, nuclei, the predictions are very difficult to make. So most of this search is done in a blind way. So really, you try to detect anything possible, and you make a guess on what kind of isotope you can identify. And there's practically no information on cross-section. So reaction study are very important. So I really push for this possibility that is we are discussing here, because it doesn't make any sense for me to search for something you don't know where to search. So to do some kind of parallel investigation where at the same time you can study kinematic reaction and prepare for targeting specific nuclide with the specific technique, I think it's more reasonable than going blindly in this condition. But another thing I want to observe is that when you do kinematic studies, it's very important to measure both fragment and coincidence. If you don't have this ability, it's very difficult to make a cross-section study. So to measure two-body reactions means you need really to detect both fragments.
Christian, please.
Just an information to add to this discussion on super heavies and multinucleon transfer. The book of Valery Zagrebaev is just published now in Lecture Notes in Physics, and all these topics are discussed in this book.
One thing to add more is that it's true that deep inelastic is known since 50 years, but we know that the regime from light ions to heavy ions is very different. Deep inelastic and light in medium mass nuclei is a different phenomena than when you go into, example, xenon plus lead, xenon plus platinum, and so on. So in this region is most interesting for us, and this is less known. So it's true that deep inelastic is known, but mostly in the medium mass regime because of many reasons, but these are historical reasons. But in the super heavy, or let's say in the heavy system, the phenomena are much less known.
Any other comments? It's a topic which we for sure will discuss for the next 20 years. Okay, I don't see. So thank you very much for the questions and this short discussion. We'll continue tomorrow. So now I have a pleasure to announce the results of the poster competition. But before announcing the results of our deliberation, I would like to say that, and this is the opinion of the whole PAC members and the whole PAC committee, that we would like to acknowledge a very high quality of the posters which we have seen today. In the long, long time ago, maybe it was not the case, but now we found that all posters were of really outstanding quality, very clear, and we hope, of course, that this will continue in the following poster sessions. So this is the major general remark. And now the results. So the members of the PAC committee were quite unanimous on the three posters. Three posters, they came almost with the equal number of recommendations. But as you know, we have to select the best poster. So I will say first what are the results for the ex aequo second place. Ex aequo in this case is really literally ex aequo. That means the posters on the second position, two posters, obtain exactly the same number of points from the committee members. So they are really truly ex aequo. So let me start for the first ex aequo proposal, which is the poster number one, presented by Gazeeva, on effective method of excitation function measurements for alpha N reaction at low energies. Congratulations. Yes. And unfortunately, I have no prize. And this second poster, as I said, ex aequo, also on the second place, is the poster presented by Schlattauer on the data acquisition control system developed for synthesis of super heavy elements at experiment DGFRS2 FLNR GNR. So, congratulations for you, Doctor. And this was really a really tiny difference, but we have a clear winner, nevertheless, of this competition. And the poster which we selected as the first one is the poster number 9 by Kuznetsova and the team. Shells studying of nobelium isotopes with Gabriela Array. So, as you know, the...
Very nice to meet you.
Of course, very nice. That we are really happy. But yes, we are happy with the quality of the presentation and quality of the poster. And as you know, the poster which was selected for the first place will have an opportunity to present the results and the scientific council in February, so in... Yes, so we strongly advise do not make any travel at the same time what happened with the previous selected posters. So please do not travel during this scientific council and present on behalf of the also the PAC and of course your laboratory this is a very nice result. So congratulations again. So this with this results, I would like to close the meeting for today. And for the committee members, let me remind you that we'll meet tomorrow in the same place at 9:30. And we'll have the meeting with the GNR directorate. Okay, 9:30 here. Yes, prepare the questions for tomorrow also. And now
we'll be welcome party against home.